Thank you to Paula and Jeff Katz. Paula and Jeff have sponsored today's class. They sponsored last week's also for Paula's mother, and this week they're sponsoring for
my father,
that's all right. Last week they sponsored for Paula's father, and today they're sponsoring in memory of Paula's husband, Jeff's father, Isaac Katz. What was his full Hebrew name? Yitzchak?
Yitzchak Menachem Ben Alexander Zisha.
Oh, Hasidish, I didn't know that. Yitzchak Menachem Ben Alexander Zisha. He was an electrician par excellence, from what everybody tells me. He was part of the triumvirate of those who worked in the shul, along with Chuck Snow and Manny Middleman, who also has his yard site today. So we will learn today, Le'iloi Nishmaso, Yitzchak Menachem Ben Alexander Zisha.
Fondly known as Eddie.
Eddie?
Fondly known Eddie. As Eddie.
Yes. Okay. Eddie Katz.
Eddie Katz. He's a great guy.
Oh, my.
Thank you.
Well, I told Paula a couple days ago when I called her for her birthday, happy birthday to Paula, that I could have used Eddie. I had some electrical problems in my living room, but I figured them out all by myself. Don't worry, the power was off. I figured that part out enough that I could do it without getting hurt. So Ricky was happy about that, but I could have used Eddie. So we all think of Eddie. And Mirz Hashem, our learning should be Le'ilu Nishmasel. So let us learn Le'ilu Nishmaso about Esther and Haman. Now, this is not necessarily the greatest of chidushim, but it is an angle of Purim that I think people don't necessarily realize. You know, when we go into Purim, we think of Purim as sort of like that outward celebration, right? Everybody comes to shul, Pirsumei Nisa. We're all, out and about. We're all wearing our masks, and we're... For all years, we're wearing our masks. This year, for sure, we're wearing our masks. And we're celebrating the shul, and there are parties, and there's loud music, and, you know, big, big feasts. So I would just want to point out, or I want to sort of go through an aspect of Purim, which I think it's overlooked because of that assumption about Purim. I just want to write a note. I just thought of something. I'm just going to write it at the end, as I usually do. Give me one second. Okay. So when we think of Purim, we oftentimes think of the hidden miracle, right? This is the concept behind masks. Robin's showing us her Purim mask. I believe on Hanukkah, I gave you a bracha that you wouldn't have to get one for Purim or Pesach. So hopefully you won't have to get one for Pesach, maybe not for Shavuos. Mirz Hashem, you'll suffice with all the ones you have already. But the Purim one you can use in future years. You know, the Hanukkah one, hopefully you'll never have to use again. But the Gemara in Chulin tells us, we quoted this last week, Haman min ha-Torah minayin. How do we know that Haman is referenced? From where in the Torah do we have a reference, a hint, some kind of allusion to Haman himself in the Torah? So Hamin ha-Eitz, right? We talked about this last week. I think we talked about this last week. Oh, that was in Pshischa on the Parsha. We talked about it. I don't think we talked about it here. Unless I'm wrong. Did we talk about it in this class? I think it was in Pshischa. So Hamin Ha'etz, right? Did Adam and Chava eat from the tree? Hashem asks them, did you eat from the tree? All of a sudden, they found out they were naked, and they started to cover themselves. They were hiding themselves. So Hashem, did you by any chance eat from the tree? We talked on Thursday night about how Haman comes from Amalek, and Amalek is the same gematria of those who weren't there. Amalek, don't do the math, you're not going to figure it out that way. Suffolk. Amalek and Suffolk have the same gematria. The same gematria. Samech is 60, Pei is 80, and Kuf is 100. So 240. So, Amalek and Suffolk have the same gematria, and therefore we know or we see Amalek as those who introduce doubt into the Jewish people, right? Amalek and their first entrance into the scene, is when they're leaving, or after they've left Mitzrayim, they got the water from Hashem, they got the man from Hashem, and the Jewish people had this very close relationship with Hashem. Everything they ever wanted, Hashem was there for them. All of a sudden, Amalek comes along, and they're tested, right? As we know, Hayesh Hashem bekirbenu imayin. We've talked about that before. Do we feel Hashem in our midst? Do we really hold Hashem inside? And that was what dictated whether they won that war against Amalek. But that was the question. Hayesh Hashem bekirbenu. They doubted themselves. That's Amalek. So that's Haman. And it's learned out from the allusion to Haman is Hamin Ha'etz. Right? From when Hashem asks a question to Adam HaRishon. Did you eat from the tree? Right? Introducing Safek into the world. Introducing a question by asking Adam, did he eat from the tree? Okay, that's one understanding of Haman. We'll see another one later. Interestingly enough, if you look at Rashi on this Gemara, I didn't bring him down here, but Rashi says, why is it Hamin Ha'etz? Because ultimately Haman was hanged on a tree, right? So it's more than just the fact that it's a question, right? There are different levels to this. Rashi, we'll give another one. We'll give another one soon. But the drasha that people are probably more familiar with is the next one. The Gemara then asks after Haman, Esther min haTorah minayin. How do we know that Esther is alluded to in the Torah? Because the pasuk tells us in Devarim Lamed Aleph towards the end of the Torah, V'anochi haster astir panai mehem. Hashem says to the Jewish people, when they don't do things properly, I will sort of conceal myself from them. Haster astir. The word Esther means to conceal. What was her real name? Hadassah. Good, Hadassah. Who was I just talking to? I was talking to somebody today who told me that their kid's name is Hadassah. Oh, Aaron Schoen wanted to make sure that his daughter could come to Megillah readings, and her name is Hadassah. So it happens to be she was born around this time. That's why she was named that. My sister also. Her name is Rachel Hadassah. She was born around Purim time also. And she typically actually, she enjoys celebrating her Hebrew birthday more than her English birthday, because her English birthday doesn't happen very often. She was born on February 29th, which that year fell right around Purim. So she celebrates her Purim-centered birthday. So her name is Rachel Hadassah.
Our great-granddaughter was born on Purim.
Oh, wow.
Her name was Sarah Hadassah.
There you go. But I don't, and there are plenty of Esthers, right? So that's also a good name for people. But Esther wasn't her real name, at least according to the Gemara here in Chulin. Her name was really Hadassah. Her name was not Esther. Why was she called Esther? Because presumably she was someone who, two ways of looking at this. And we're going to present the third one. Number one is that maybe she lived at a time of Hester Panim. She lived at a time where Hashem was more concealed from the Jewish people. We know the Jewish people were in Persia at the time. They didn't have a Beis Hamikdash. They were exiled already, hoping to get back there. Right? Mordechai would lead them back, sort of. Or he was from the first one. But either way. So Esther was time where Hashem concealed himself. They were in Gullus, right? They were exiled to Persia, right? So that was Esther. She lived at that time. Or alternatively, and this is what people typically think of when they...
You're all done upstairs?
This is what people typically think of why her name was Esther, or what her connection is to the Purim. And it has to do with the masks. Right, it has to do with dressing up on Purim, because the whole story is masked. Hashem doesn't reveal that he's pulling the strings behind the scenes, so we don't necessarily see it explicitly, although it's pretty clear and obvious that that's what's going on. With all of the circumstantial coincidences that happen throughout the story, we understand that Hashem is really pulling the strings. And that's why it's Hester Panim. Hashem is concealing himself, even though he's still there visibly for those who want to find him. Those are two ways that people typically understand this. Understand the connection between Esther and Haster Astir Panai Mehem, that Hashem was concealed. I'd like to propose, just by looking at different psukim, looking at different scenes in the Megillah, a different possibility. When you look at and sort of compare and contrast the character of Haman and the character of Esther. We first find, towards the beginning of the Megillah, we find Ahasuerus is making this whole party, right? He's making a feast, and the whole thing with Vashti. Okay, and then you find that ultimately Esther wins the beauty pageant, and she was able to, you know, become the queen. And then what happens? Vayas HaMelech Mishtegadol, right? Ahasuerus brings as much attention as he could to Esther. Right, and he makes all these wonderful things. He makes a whole feast. He makes a tax break in her honor. Not really sure why those two things are connected, but I guess he's trying to sort of celebrate, and he wants the whole people to celebrate with him, and gave out gifts as befits a king. Okay, that's what kings do. They give gifts. I'm not exactly sure what he gave out. But nonetheless, he gave out gifts to everybody. This pasuk in the middle is kind of a strange pasuk. What exactly is going on here? That he's bringing all the other women together again, right? He already went through all the women, and now he's bringing them together again. The Gemara tells us that he had actually asked Mordechai how to get Esther to reveal herself and to talk about who she was, and that's why the next pasuk says Ein Esther Mageras Malaritza. But Mordechai thought, and Mordechai said to Ahasuerus, even though he knew it was going to work, because he knew Esther better than Ahasuerus knew Esther. But he said to Ahasuerus, according to the Gemara in Megillah, I want to say it was on Daf Yud Tes, but I don't know. But either way, so Mordechai says to Ahasuerus, you know, get her a little jealous. Bring the girls around again, and then maybe she's going to want to show herself off, talk more about it, open herself up. It didn't work, because the next pasuk says, Ein Esther Mageras Malaritza V'Yasama. She still didn't tell about who she was. Kasher Tziva Aleha Mordechai, just like Mordechai told her. I remember when I was a kid, I used to go to a Megillah reading, and the only mistake the person ever made was saying Mordechai versus Mordechai. And it has to do with the Esnachta, if his name is at the end of a phrase or end of a pasuk. The truth is, it's not a mistake. They always used to correct it, but it's not a mistake. Mordechai and Mordechai are the same thing. It's just when it comes at an end of a phrase, it's just sort of like a grammatical thing that you always change it to a kamatz instead of a patach. Really, it's not a mistake. So either way,
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Esther, were all the women forced to come to this thing, or was this a voluntary kind of thing?
You get the impression that there was some kind of understanding that, you know, if you had a young girl, she was supposed to be there, but it doesn't say explicitly.
She was supposedly married, right? So even if you were married, you were supposed to come?
I don't know. How does it phrase it when he first gives her... If I saw that Smara Vos may be a man like a Hamar, a high low of us, for he be Shama Devar Malkava, that so be Kabit Naros Barabos, I'll show you how he guy, Vatila Kach.
It's 4 hours just to learn that.
What was that, Raina? I think we lost Raina there, but the word Vatila Kach implies that there was some kind of coercion there. Vatila kach is a passive verb that he didn't give her, she was taken. Vatila kach es terel beis hamelech, she was taken to the king. Or at least to hey guy, whatever you want to call him. I don't know what position that is. Shomer hanashim, he used to guard the women. It's a weird, I don't know how you apply for that job, but that's what he did. Either way. So it sounds like there was some coercion there. I'm not sure if they gathered every single person up, or there was some kind of, you know, weeding out process. I have no idea. But that's what it sounds like from the pasuk, at least. So either way, Ein Esther Mageres Malaritza V'Yasama Kasher Tziva Aleha Mordechai V'Yasmamar Mordechai Esther Osa, and everything Mordechai did, she did. Mordechai said she did. Kasher Haysav Amna Yitao, because she believed him, or he, you know, they were trusted together. Amna, like emuna. They trusted each other. There was a certain, this says, under his tutelage. Interesting phrasing there. But either way, what we find here is that Ahasuerus, at least according to the Psukim, and also certainly according to Chazal, wanted Esther to open up a little bit. Tell us more about yourself. He tries to make this whole feast for her. He tries to make this whole tax break, gives out gifts in her honor. He wants people to know about her, but she's not opening up. There's this interesting contrast where Ahasuerus is talking about her, right, is celebrating her, but she's still not saying anything. And this, by the way, we already know, right? Esther, we already know from earlier on in the Perek that she didn't tell anybody that she was Jewish when she got to the king's palace. And nonetheless, the Pasuk, the Megillah, feels the need to repeat itself in order to remind us, even though Ahasuerus is trying to sort of flaunt his new queen to the rest of the kingdom, she's not talking and she's not opening up. This seems to be in contrast to Haman himself. What happens when Haman is appointed and when Haman is given a little honor? Obviously, he makes everyone bow down to him. He makes people, and he's furious when Mordechai won't do it. If you look at source number 3, Vayisaper lahem Hamanes kvod ashro ve'rov banav. Right, and Haman told them about his great wealth and his many sons. V'yez ko asher gidlo hamelech v'yez asher niso. Right, and he talked to them about how much the king promoted him and brought him above, and elevated him above all the other officials and the other king's servants. Vayomar Haman, we don't have to bang or anything like that. I can't hear you anyway. Karen's waving her figurative grogger over there, but Vayomar Haman, Aflo hevia Esther amaka im hamelch hamishteh asher asas kimosi. The only person Esther brought to her little rendezvous with the king was me. Right? They're in this newlywed. You would think they want some time alone. No, they want to be with me. And he's talking about how he's so significant. He's so unique. He's being promoted in this way. V'gam lemachar, and even tomorrow ani karolai im hamelch. Why does there have to be two feasts? That's a whole other question. We can talk about it a different time. But I'm also going to be invited to their meal tomorrow. V'chol zeh, as Haman says, v'chol zeh inainu shoveli, all of this is not worth it at all. Eino shove is an interesting word. It doesn't even rise to be equitable. It's not even the same. It's not even on par with the pain that I feel. When I see Mordechai sitting there and he's not giving me the due respect, my due respect, then I get even more upset. I'm more upset than I am happy about all the other things. So first of all, another connection to Haman and Adam Harishon. Right, this is another just one little thing. One thing he can't have, and he can't bear not having it. Right, that's the same as the Adam with the Nachash. He can have everything. Mechol etz hagan tochel, achas etz asher betoch hagan lo yachel. Just the first one, just that middle one, you can't have from that tree. But all the other things you could have. Mordechai could have all the accolades and all the attention for everything, but that one Mordechai he can't have, and that's driving him. That's another connection between other. Most people pointed that out when they look at the Gemara that we saw in the first source. It's not worth it. So says, what does Zeresh say back? Vatomer lo Zeresh ishto. V'chol ohavav. By the way, Zeresh is a fascinating character. I find Zeresh to be a fascinating character. We have midrashic explanations in the background of the story, how she flips and things like that. But even within the same, within one parak of each other, right? You find that Zeresh is about to say, you know, off with his head, and then in the next parak, what does she say? Hold on, at the end of, right after he takes him around, after Haman takes Mordechai around, so she says at the end. Hold on. Vayomru lo chachamav v'zeres yishto. Right? All of Haman's, I don't know exactly who this is, his wise people, and Zeresh say, im mizera ha-yudim Mordechai, if this Mordechai guy is from the Jews, asher achilos l'pol v'anav lo suchalo, you're not going to be able to beat that guy. He's from the Jews. He's a Jew. He's going to, kinafolti pol v'anav, you're always going to lose to him. So wait a second, Zeresh. You were just telling me that I should hang him from the gallows, right? The next pasuk. Vatomer lo zeres yishto v'chol avav yasu etz gavoa chamishim ama uvaboker emor lamelech. And in the morning say to Achashverosh v'yislu es Mordechai alav, and to hang him on that. Uvo memelech memeshtesh sameach. Right? You'll be able to have full joy, full uninhibited joy when Mordechai is finally killed off and you don't have to worry about him anymore. right? Obviously, the coincidence is that between then and the next time, Achashverosh goes to sleep, he opens up the book, and the whole thing with Mordechai, and then the next thing, parading him around the streets, and he can't get to it. And by the time he's done mourning the fact that this whole thing happened, he's whisked off to this mishta with Esther and Achashverosh. So first of all, Zeresh, interesting character. We're not focusing on Zeresh today, but something to think about. But what exactly is she asking? What exactly is she proposing for Haman? Right, it's very interesting that she's asking him to put Mordechai on the gallows. Why is she asking specifically to kill him in this way? Presumably there are other ways to kill him, right? How did Achashverosh kill Bigson and Zeresh? Do we know? They were also hung, right? They were hanged too. I think so. Vaitalush Nehem Aleitz. I think that's what it says at the end of Perek Beis.
That's what they did in those days.
Yeah, Vaitalush Nehem Aleitz. Yeah, and he killed them by hanging them. I want to focus on the hanging as sort of like a running metaphor, right? We see it throughout the Megillah. But what does hanging represent, right? When you hang someone, especially on a 50 cubit pole, so what are you trying to do? You're not just trying to get rid of them. Yeah, Esther?
It's very public.
Right, you're trying to sort of publicize their death. You're trying to show that this person never got the better of you. Right? And you want everybody else to know that. It's not good enough just to get rid of them and sort of, you know, to take them away as being a nuisance. It's the publicity of it which is particularly important when you're hanging them. So that's presumably why Haman says it in this way. If you look back at Pasuk Yud Gimel, what does Pasuk Yud Gimel say? Every time that I see Mordechai, Yoshe B'Shar HaMelech, I see him sitting in the gate of the king. What does it mean, I see him sitting in the gate of the king? Why is Haman presumably upset at Mordechai? Not because he's sitting at the gate, right? I mean, he's just sitting there, right? What's so bad about seeing Mordechai? It's that he's sitting in the gate of the king. The problem is that he's not giving you honor. It shouldn't have said, B'chol eis asher einenu mishtachav eli. For any time that he's not bowing down to me, I get upset. But he doesn't say that. It's specifically that he's Yoshe B'shar HaMelech. It's specific that Mordechai is out in the public. He's in the main thoroughfare. He's on Pennsylvania Avenue, and he's just not doing anything. You know, he's not doing anything for Haman. And that's presumably why Zeresh, specifically responds by saying, he's embarrassing you in public, you have to embarrass him in public. Right? Very interesting. This is in contrast, presumably, to Esther herself. Right, we just saw in source number 2 that Achashverosh makes her this huge party. He sends out messages to the entire kingdom, to everybody in Persia. I've got this new woman, she's the wonderful queen, but then she doesn't respond in kind. Right? Ein Esther Mageres Moad Tzavi Asama. Esther doesn't respond by talking about herself, by sort of going on the talk shows and by going, you know, and flaunting herself, you know, to everybody else like Achashverosh wants. Similar, by the way, to how Achashverosh was wanting Vashti to act, right? He wanted Vashti to act in the same way, sitting at this mishta, sitting at this feast with everybody else there. He wants her to come out and show her off. So he's trying to do the same thing with Esther, and Esther's similarly not going for it. Because thankfully he wasn't drunk and maybe it wasn't as much pressure, nothing happened to her. But nonetheless, Esther wasn't playing into the exposure that Achashverosh wanted. Haman, on the other hand, was all about exposure. He was all about telling people, "Vayisaper lehem Haman es kvod ashro, look how important I am. Lo hivi Esther makim melech el mishta asher asas kimo. See, only I was invited to this very important thing. The one thing that's bothering my reputation, that's not showing me in a good light in the public, is this one Mordechai. Sitting out in Main Street every single day, not bowing down to me. But it's specifically because, you know, if Mordechai would sit in his, sit in his cubicle and he would, you know, post angry messages on the king's blog, okay, fine. Nobody's going to see that. But he's out in the open. Everybody sees he's working against the king. So that's the problem Haman has, that he's Yoshev B'Shar HaMelech. He doesn't even mention the fact that he's not bowing down. Just the fact that he's out in public is ruining my reputation. So Zeresh says, let's punish him publicly too. Well, you know, Mida Keneged Mida. Let's say that he shouldn't have this public public opportunity anymore.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
I never thought about this before, actually, but since you brought it up,
yeah.
The fact that he just complains that Mordechai is just sitting there,
yeah.
Maybe that is all it is. The fact that, I mean, it's a Jew hatred.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we're very aware of that today, of course.
Right,
and
just the existence.
Just seeing him.
Right.
Nothing to do with people, nothing to do with bowing, the fact that he's wearing an idol or whatever.
Right.
He just can't stand to see the Jew.
Yeah, that could be part of that sort of anti-Semitic precedence that we find. You just can't stand the person themselves, regardless of what they do or don't do. Interesting point. Thank you. So Esther continues at the feast, right? A little further on. Vatom, right? In between here, in between 3 and 4, by the way, is the whole thing, the parade with Mordechai and Haman. Vatomer Esther, right? Mordechai says, Ma she'el aseich, ma brakash aseich, ad chatzia ma'achus v'inasein lach, whatever you want, until, you know, half the kingdom, I'll give it to you. Vatomer Esther, ish tsar v'yo, she says that there's this person that's trying to kill the Jews, my people. And he said, who could ever want to do such a thing? Vatomer Esther, ish tsar v'ayev Haman hara hazeh. The Haman nivas milvnei hamalch v'hamalka. Right? She finally gives it up. It's Haman. By the way, kudos, credit to Esther for inviting Haman to this, right? She did not have to have him right there, right? One could presumably imagine that she could have accomplished the same thing by not having Haman sit right there at the table, right? She's inviting conflict, and she's inviting, you know, a retort. She's inviting a rebuttal, and he's just sitting right there. And Esther says, I don't care if you're right in front of me when I talk bad about you. You are ish tsar v'ayev. Right, the queen who just 5 minutes ago, not 5 minutes ago, right, just beforehand was afraid to go into the king's chamber lest she die, is now not afraid to talk badly about the king's second in command right to his face. Right, unbelievable the change that Esther has internally. But what happens? Does that actually change? Here's the trick question before you turn over the page. Does that change Esther's mind? Does that change Ahasuerus's mind? Esther says, this guy, he's trying to kill the Jews. So what does Ahasuerus respond? It's sort of a trick question. We don't really know what Ahasuerus responds. The next pasuk says, Ahasuerus gets up and walks out of the room. Right? He was upset. Hamelech kam b'chamaso, mimishteh yain, elginas habisan, right? He gets up and he walks out. The Haman Amad, and then Haman stands up, unclear where he was sitting, but Haman stands up, Levakesh al Nafsho. And all of a sudden, Haman thinks he's got it in for him. Haman thinks that he's got to save himself. Levakesh al Nafsho, Master Amaka. Interesting that he doesn't go to Ahasuerus to ask, you know, to justify what's going on. He goes to Esther, the root of the problem, and he starts to beg. Kira kichalsa ilav hara me'ez hamelech. Why didn't he go to Ahasuerus? Because Ahasuerus was very upset at him. Right, so he goes to Esther instead. I guess Esther wasn't upset at him. I don't know what he was thinking. But I guess Esther didn't have the same kind of power as Ahasuerus did. So what happens? We don't really know. This is sort of the quirky part of the Megillah. We don't actually know what happens, what would have happened. We know later on in the Megillah that even though Ahasuerus was upset about this, he doesn't overturn the edict. Right? What happens? The Jews still have to fight a war. Right, Ahasuerus is not going to give extra troops to it, but the men, right, Ahasuerus says, the hadas nitna b'shushan arbira, the fight is already set. You know, we already sold all the tickets, we can't cancel it now, right? So what exactly was Ahasuerus going to do? What was he going to do after he hears this about Haman? It's not clear. For some reason, or I guess specifically, presumably because it was an essential aspect of the story, otherwise we would not need this detail. What happens in the very next pasuk? V'hamelech shav miginas habisan. He comes back from the garden. He's, you know, after he took a walk to walk it off and think it over. El beis mishteh ayayin. V'haman nofel al hamita asher Esther aleha. All of a sudden, Ahasuerus sees that Haman was on Esther's bed. They used to sit on like these futons or whatever, these chaise lounges, in order to eat back then. So, you know, Haman is falling on her bed. So what happened? I don't know exactly what the scene is, but interestingly enough, Chazal doesn't really talk about how Haman was trying to do anything to Esther in a sexual way, right? We never find that Chazal imply, at least not, you know, in a common Rashi's or other Mefarshim, that actually Haman was trying to do anything. It just literally says he fell on the bed. Are you trying to also conquer my queen while I am in the house? The second the king said such a thing, Haman's face was covered. Chafu is an interesting word. We also have it where? Earlier on, right? When he was ashamed from walking Mordechai around. This is where the Midrash picks up and says that, that Zeresh threw something on him or whatever, right? Because Chafoi Rosh. He was covered. Here, I don't know what Midrashim say about this face covering, but he was also ashamed here too. So what's going on? It seems as if the linchpin, or I guess the turning point in the whole Megillah story is not as, or it might not be, and I don't want to say too much, but it might not be simply that, Esther gave up the gig that Haman was a bad guy. But it was that Haman seemed to have tried to do something to Esther. Ahasuerus turns on Haman specifically when he sees him trying to do something with Esther. Now the truth is, he wasn't. The truth is that all it says is Haman no fell al mita, right? He just happened to fall on the bed, but he wasn't actually trying to do anything. Why is that the perfect turning point? Because if one could say that Haman's entire notion, his entire reputation is built up of a sandcastle, that he has this unbelievable reputation of being this great officer, this important person, but really at the core of it, he wasn't doing anything important. He was actually doing things that were destructive and problematic, right? So he, in a sense, had built up a fake facade for his own praise, for his own significance, his own dignity. And that's why he keeps telling people about him. That's why he's upset that no one's bowing down to him. Because for him, his entire persona was built on his public appearance. For him, everybody had to bow down to him in order to create who he was. He was only what he was on the outside. And what is exactly the moment where he loses all of it? Is something where he's doing something on the outside, and even though really he wasn't doing it. Right? The exact opposite of what he's been doing the whole time. He's been building up a fake facade on the outside where really he was nothing on the inside. And now he has this fake facade of doing something wrong on the outside, even though he wasn't really doing it on the inside. It's the perfect flip because Haman was always about his public persona and his public perception, even if it wasn't the real perception. It wasn't the reality. And here he's being punished. The whole theme, the whole story flips on its head specifically because his outward perception falls apart, even though the reality is nothing like he was doing wrong. So he's punished in the same way he created a facade for his own, for his own praise. He's now created a facade for his own downfall. It's such a beautiful way when you look at it in that way, that that his downfall is exactly what he was trying to do, but in the opposite direction. And then what happens the very next pasuk, as we know, V'gam charvona zachor lato, v'yomer charvona echad min asari sim l'bnei ha-melech, gam hinei ha-eit asher asa ha-man l'mordachai asher diber tov al-melech, omei b'beis ha-man gavor ha-chamishimam v'yomer ha-melech t'lu alav. The very next pasuk says the same thing Zeresh said. You know what will be mida keneged mida for Haman? The guy who's always worried about his public perception, you should hang him on the tree. Just like he wanted to hang Mordechai on the tree because he was ruining his public perception, you should hang Haman on the tree because he's so obsessed with his public perception. The same exact sort of 1-2 step where Haman is trying to create this public identity, and the very next pasuk is trying to say that the tree, the gallows, the ultimate symbol of losing or being too focused on that public perception is going to be his downfall. This I find interesting specifically because if we go back to the first source, or at least the connection to the first source, with source number 5, what do we find? We find the instance of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden. Vayikra Hashem Elokim El Adam. Hashem, you know, calls out to Adam. Vayomer lo ayeka, says Rashi on that pasuk. He doesn't really need to know where he was. Hashem doesn't need to know where Adam was. Hashem knows where Adam is. But he instead asks Adam as if to give him an opportunity, give him an opportunity to be honest, to talk about what's really going on. Vayomer, what does Adam say? As kol chashamati began, I heard your voice, God, I heard your voice. Va'iran, I got upset. Ki eroma nochi ve'echave, and therefore I hid myself. What is Adam doing? He's trying to hide. He thinks he can hide what's going on from Hashem by pretending something didn't happen, right? He's hiding ve'echave, that he's going. So Hashem says, Vayomar mihi gilecha ki eromata, who told you were naked? Hamin ha'etz asher tivisich levilti acham menu achata, did you eat from the tree? Right, so Hashem basically is accusing Adam, who's trying to hide the fact that he actually did something, and Hashem basically says, "I know you did it. Stop trying to hide, because at a certain point, your public perception can only go so far. You think you can hide who you truly are, but ultimately Hashem really knows. Hashem really knows what's going on behind the scenes, and just like Haman was trying to build up a public facade, this perception on the outside that maybe he was one thing instead of what he truly was, Hashem ultimately finds him out and exposes what he truly is on the inside. And that's when Hashem says, "Hamin ha'etz asher tivisicha levilti achol mimenu achata." I know you ate from the Eitz Hadas. I know you ate from that tree. Stop trying to hide it. Stop trying to echave. Stop trying to hide, and instead be honest and real about what's going on. This is perhaps another level of the connection between Haman and this scene, because Haman himself was also trying to hide what he was always doing, and instead was trying to create a public perception of who he was, and the part that he couldn't truly conquer was Mordechai himself. He wasn't buying into the facade. He wasn't buying into the public perception. This is perhaps another layer of what it means that Esther is hinted to from the Torah with the words Haster Astir. Because Esther was the person who was Haman's arch enemy. Arch enemy not in terms of fighting mano a mano, not because of any sort of physical battle, but because of a contrast in perspective. Haman was all about creating the public perception as opposed to being real about who he was on the inside. And Esther, even in the face of getting so much publicity from Ahasuerus, was still hiding who she was on the inside. She didn't really feel the need to tell anyone about herself. She could have piggybacked on Ahasuerus' fame and Ahasuerus' pomp and circumstance for all of the things he was doing for her, but she decided to stay in the background. She decided to stay modest and without the public persona that Ahasuerus was looking for. The pasuk in Micha tells us, "Higi lecha adam matov ma Hashem doresh mimcha." What is it that Hashem wants from you, man, and what's good? Ki masos mishbar vavas chesed, to do justice, to be kind, v'hatznei alecha simel kecha, and walk modestly with Hashem. The Gemara in Sukkah tells us, "May dechsev higi lecha adam matov ma Hashem doresh mimcha." Ki masos mishbar vavas chesed, v'hatznei alecha simel kecha, asos mishbar zehadin. The words asot mishpat, to do justice, mean civil law. Avas chesed, zug milas chesedim, that means treating people nicely. What's hatznei alecha simel kecha? Hatznei alecha, to walk modestly, means zu hotzas hames v'achnasas kala l'chuppa. This is burying a dead body and bringing a bride to the wedding canopy, to the chuppa. So says Rabbi Eliezer, v'halog dvarim kavachomer. Those things, like burying the dead and bringing the kala to the chuppah, those things are very public. Those are very public things. Everyone can see those things happening. Nonetheless, for those the Torah says, or Micha says, Amar Torah, even in those public things, we're supposed to be modest, Devarim shadarkan lasos mitzina al achas kama v'kana. For those things that we're supposed to be modest for, those things that are naturally private, all the more so we should be modest about them. The difference between Haman and Esther is whether or not they need everybody else to know about all the good things we're doing. Whether we need other people to give us praise in public in order to make ourselves feel good. Or are we modestly satisfied and I guess ennobled by the fact that we're doing the right thing, regardless of whether or not somebody else knows about it. And this is particularly the hinge of the Megillah, because while Haman is always constantly trying to promote his own public appearance and sort of feed that public persona and his reputation that everybody knows about, Esther is the opposite. Even though Ahasuerus is trying to build her up and sort of put her on all the billboards, she still doesn't want to. Ein Esther Magedes Malatavi Asama. She still doesn't want to tell anybody about herself. She doesn't care for the publicity. And this is exactly what this Gemara and Sukkah is telling us about: the importance of having that self satisfaction. I'm trying to find a better word, that feeling of purpose, that feeling of importance without public accolade and without other people knowing it. Rashi tells us in source number 8, what's an example of something about how to walk humbly? This might just be coincidental, but look at Rashi in source number 8 on that Gemara. Hotzas hames v'achnas eskala d'chsiv v'hu leches tov l'leches al beis avel. Mi leches al beis hameshte, he quotes the pasuk from Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles. It's better to go to a place of mourning than to a place of frivolity, a mishteh. Perhaps the most popular mishteh we know of is Ahasuerus's mishteh, of which he makes for not only Esther, but also Vashti, and we saw that it turned out. The Mishteh is a place where it's very public. Af sham tzar chatzneah. Even in those places, even at a Mishteh, even at a feast, you have to be modest. Lis'od b'midanav, lis'mach b'midanav, to eat properly, and to rejoice properly. V'lo lahani kalus rosh batzmo, and to not take it overboard. And to be overly frivolous. That's presumably, I don't know, Rashi probably doesn't have it in mind because he didn't say it. But that's exactly what happens in source number 4. No, sorry, in source number 2. Vayas hamelch mishteh gadol. Ahasuerus made this huge mishteh, a huge feast. They called it the Feast of Esther. This was her feast. And then she said, Pasuk says, nonetheless, even at the feast, which was made specifically for her, all eyes are on her, the spotlight's on her, everybody wants to know about her, she's not going to talk. She'd rather just sit in the back. You can celebrate me all you want, but I don't need the accolades. I don't need the public reputation like others might want. This is just coincidentally, or maybe not, how Rashi understands this pasuk. Even at a mishteh, even at a feast, you still have to be humble. You still have to be modest, and you don't need to have other people's opinion of you. In order to feel satisfied in your own avodas Hashem, there's an interesting drasha that people make, and this is not on the source sheet, so you'll forgive me for extending it a little bit. But there's an interesting drasha people usually make when it comes to pirsume nisa. There are three mitzvos that we have in halacha that require or that bring about pirsume nisa, which is the publication or the publicizing of the miracle. Right? What are those times? We have Chanukah. We have Pesach, and we have Purim, right? Not in that order. Chanukah, Purim, Pesach. What is the order? Is there any difference between the Pirsumei Nisas? Right? If we know that when it comes to Chanukah, where do we put the Chanukiah? We put it right in the window for everybody else to see, right? We say in Al Nisim, L'cha asis Hashem gadol v'kadosh ba'olam echa. Hashem, we're making a great name for the world. Everybody's going to know Hashem's name. Chanukah is all about having an unabashed, a shameless devotion to Judaism. Regardless of what other people want us to do, we're going to be Jewish out in the public. Make sure we have that pride of doing our religion without shame, without fear of consequence. That's Chanukah. What's Pesach all about? Celebes avo celebias. Pirsume nisa of Pesach is in the home. In the home is where you publicize the miracle. When do we apply the concept of pirsume nisa? Specifically the dalad kosos, to the four cups of wine that we eat at the Seder. We don't eat the four cups of wine even in shul. We don't eat the cups of wine out near a window. We don't eat the cups of wine outside. Those are only in our home with our family and friends around the table. It's a much closer group. What about Purim? The pirsume nisa, as we'll say, and you know, for the Haggadah itself, right? We'll say the bracha, sha'as anisim lavosenu, right? That's the bracha of pirsume nisa. Who do we do the pirsume nisa for on Purim? Who do you do it for on Purim? Presumably, it's for only those people that are in the shul. It's not for other people that are outside of the shul. It's sort of like the middle ground between Hanukkah and Pesach. It's not as intimate as doing it with your family, but it's not as public as doing it with the world, like we do on Hanukkah by the window. Purim is about this sort of this balance of how much you're in the public and how much you're in the private. It's not too much private. It's not too much in your house. It's not too much in the public. And it's in some ways trying to find that balance of Esther Hamalka. Esther, Haster Astir Panai. We know she's hidden. We know that the story is hidden in some ways, but it's because she's hiding herself. Esther is hiding her own persona. Even though it's a public thing, she's a queen, right? She has naturally a public persona. She's nonetheless trying to hide her identity and having a certain level of modesty, because for her, to have a significant feeling of a purposeful fulfillment in her Judaism was not about having everybody else know about it, but it was rather making sure she was doing the right thing. And that's why she held out until she had to. And this is specifically the contrast between her and Esther. And coming full circle, in the beginning of the sources, we have this one source in Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Tes. We first ask Haman min HaTorah Minayin, and then we ask Esther min HaTorah Minayin. Perhaps one could say a further drasha that these two drashas, these two references to Haman and Esther are actually contrasting each other. Haman, when it comes to Adam Harishon, is sort of hinted to by the fact that Adam was trying to hide himself from Hashem, even though Hashem knew the true reality of the situation. Esther, on the other hand, is referenced by Anochi Haster Astir Panai. I'm going to hide my face. I don't need everybody else to know about all the things I'm doing in order to find fulfillment. I don't need to post everything on social media. I don't need to tell everyone and everybody about all the things that I'm doing. If I'm giving charity on Purim, I can do so, you know, modestly. I don't need everybody else to make a plaque for me or anything like that. I can just do what I have to do modestly. That's perhaps the contrast between Haman and Esther, trying to figure out how public should we be and how private should we be, finding that balance and making sure we're not being sustained and satisfied by the fact that everybody else knows about us. That's Haman's domain. Haman is all about making sure that his identity through the opinion of other people. We, on the other hand, should be more like Esther. Haster Astir Panai, we should be able to find our purpose and satisfaction in our own Yiddishkeit without needing other people's public opinions about us to know everything that we're doing. And in that way, hopefully, even though Purim is oftentimes considered like a very boisterous and lively and outward holiday, Purim is still something that should be done in the home, should be done privately. The pirsume nisa is not in olam. It's not outside on the streets, you know, even by a window. It's rather something that should be done modestly on the inside, including the way that we have our feasts, including the way that we give mishloach manos, and especially the way that we give out charity to other people. It should not be done so that other people can see us, but rather because we really want to help others. So hopefully that's a little bit of an angle, not the biggest chiddush again, but a little of an angle of Esther and Haman that you maybe haven't thought about, that you can think about this year, that dichotomy, that contrast between being a private person and a public person. Okay, everyone should be well. Have a freilich and Purim.
Could I ask you a question?
Yes, you can ask me a question. Thank you again to Paula and Jeff for sponsoring in memory of Isaac, Eddie Katz. Our learning should be l'ilo nishmaso.